she could see. Every morning he left their apartment wearier, tenser, after a few hours of tossing and moaning in his sleep. Every evening he returned to his office or the laboratories, working far past midnight to find a way to reach his silent alpha. "It's as if I have a rival," she thought, as she stood before the bathroom mirror and clipped on her earrings. "He loves that monster of a contraption. He spends more time trying to woo it back to him than he spends with me." Satisfied at last with her appearance, she left the apartment and headed around behind her apartment building, down along the shadowy lane that led into the little clump of woods next to the lake. She felt furtive, nervous, and more than a little excited. "This is an adventure," she told herself, as she passed the wide-spaced lamps along the curving path. "An adventure. Keep your wits about you, and all will be well." Everly had been cautious when she'd first phoned him and asked for a private meeting. Even in the phone's display screen, she could see the suspicion in his eyes. The man was handsome, there was no denying it. From all that Jean-Marie had heard of him, Everly had no interest in women. "Perhaps he is gay," she thought, although she had heard not a whisper to that effect either. So she dressed in a frilly sheath, trimmed in black lace, that was modest enough, except for its décolleté neckline, and walked determinedly toward her rendezvous with Everly. In her hand she clutched a tiny beaded bag that held little more than her palm comb. "If Edouard should phone from his office, I can answer him," she told herself. "If he comes home early and finds me gone, I can tell him I went for a walk."
Malcolm Everly was more curious than worried as he strode along the shadowy path toward his meeting with Madame Urbain. "Why has she called me out of the blue?" he asked himself, and asked for a private meeting, no less. No one else, just the two of us. A tryst in the dark of night. Everly thought he knew the reason, but it seemed so out of kilter, so absurd, that he didn't trust his own reasoning. "It can't be," he told himself as he walked toward the dark woods by the lake. "She'd never try to seduce me, not even for her husband's sake. She can't be thinking of anything like that." Yet he found himself curious, eager, almost excited to see what Jean-Marie Urbain had to offer him.
10 January, 2096. Midnight. "It's like an unending nightmare," Edouard Urbain said to himself. He sat at his desk, head sunk between his hands, handsome silk ascot hanging loose and sweaty from his shirt collar, his pearl-gray jacket tossed over the back of a chair. "Endless. Night and day I try to make something work, and it is useless. It's like one of those dreams where you are struggling to get away from something horrible, but you can't move. Your feet are mired in mud or sinking into wet concrete." He banged a fist on his desktop so hard it hurt. "Why?" he demanded of the empty office. "Why won't she speak to me?" With red-rimmed eyes, he reviewed the latest reports from his staff. Alpha was still incommunicado, somewhere on the surface of Titan. She could not be located unless low-altitude satellites were put in place around Titan to search for her with infrared and radar scanners. "And Everly will not allow the satellites to be launched unless I agree to his scheme to mine Saturn's rings." Endless, a never-ending cycle of frustration. My career is in tatters, my life is ruined. I'm already a laughingstock back on Earth. The news media are doing stories about my failure. What can I do? Urbain asked himself. What choice do I have? Everly holds all the power. If I don't give in to him, I'll never find Alpha. Never have a prayer of regaining contact with her. Urbain straightened up in his chair. Let's look at this calmly, he told himself. Rationally. Either you agree to mining the rings, or you lose Alpha forever. Or at least until some other group is sent out here with the personnel and equipment to locate Alpha and get her to begin sending data. By then, you will have been replaced, sent home to Quebec in disgrace, a miserable failure, a has-been, a never-was. No, Urbane told himself sternly. That cannot be allowed. If I agree to allow that miserable extortionist Eberly to mine the rings, I can locate Alpha and bring her back to life. Me, myself. Wonderly will go berserk, but that is her problem, not mine. Besides, she will immediately appeal to the ICU and IAA. They will never allow mining the rings if Wonderly can show that Saturn's rings are indeed biologically active. Urbane glanced at the digital time display on his desktop screen. Exactly midnight. Very well, he told himself, his mind made up at last. I will agree to Everly's ridiculous demand. Let him mine the rings, or try to. My first priority, my only priority, is to save Alpha. With a grim smile, he ordered the phone to call Malcolm Everly, regardless of the hour.
Holly hadn't wanted to ask Pancho for advice, but there was no one else she could think of. After her disastrous breakup with Raoul, she rushed to her apartment and spent hours pacing, thinking, rerunning their meeting in her head, calling herself a fool, a blind idiot, to put Raoul in a bind like that. No wonder he walked out. He thinks all I'm interested in is to get him to fly Nadia to the rings. Stupid! Stupid! She realized that she loved Raoul Tavalera, but he would never believe her now. Love is based on trust, she knew, and he'll never be able to trust me again. Never. She held back the tears that threatened to engulf her, but Holly knew she wouldn't be able to sleep. She didn't even change into her nightclothes. She simply paced her apartment, eyeing the phone console, wanting to call Raoul, but knowing it would be useless, pointless. I've been a cosmic idiot, she told herself, an intergalactic dim-dum. It was just past midnight when she found herself ordering the phone to call her sister. As soon as she realized it, she wanted to cancel the call, but before she could, Pancho's face appeared on the small screen of the phone console. What's up, sis? Pancho looked wide awake, grinning happily. I didn't wake you up, did I? Holly asked.
Hell no. Jake and I were just raiding the fridge. Those meals at Nemo's can be pretty skimpy.
I guess. Pancho's eyes narrowed. What's the matter? What's wrong? Swallowing once before replying, Holly asked, Punch, could you come over here, to my place? I need to talk to you, just the two of us.
Faster than light, kid, said Pancho.
It was so good of you to come here to meet me, Jean-Marie Urbaine said, wondering if Eberly could hear the nervous thundering of her pulse. Eberly smiled graciously in the darkness of the little woods.
I must confess that your call surprised me, Madame Urbaine.
Jean-Marie, she murmured, as she walked alongside Eberly along the shadowy twining path. My friends call me Jean-Marie.
You count me as a friend?
She hesitated a heartbeat. Then, I hope so. Eberly chuckled softly.
Your husband doesn't think of me as a friend.
She thought carefully before replying. Edouard is completely immersed in his work. He has no time for friendships, no room for personal relations.
Not even for his wife?
Jean-Marie pictured herself walking a tightrope over an abyss. One false step, and I am doomed, she told herself. Eberly took her silence as agreement.
It's a shame that such a lovely woman is neglected.
She sighed. It is his work, his reason for existence. He takes others, his aides, his associates, for granted.
And you as well?
I'm afraid so.
That's very sad.
It took all her courage to reply. Sad, yes. And lonely. Eberly walked in silence for several paces along the path. She could not make out the expression on his face. He was slightly taller than she, but she got no impression of brute masculine strength. Rather, Jean-Marie felt as if she were walking with a stealthy cat padding along beside her, eyeing her with calculating eyes. At last he said,
I know what it is to be lonely.
You do?